Dying to be sick is a new translation of Le Malade Imaginaire by Molière, and the translation is by Adrian Clarkson and John Van Buren. And this is one of the most celebrated comedies of Western theater by the greatest comic writer in any language, I believe, Molière. And The Imaginary Invalid is a story about a great hypochondriac named Argan, who really has nothing wrong with him other than he's addicted to being sick. He's also a cheap miser, and he has a beautiful young daughter that he is convinced he's going to marry to a doctor so that he can get free medical treatment. And his daughter isn't too happy about this. She's in love with a handsome, dashing young buck named Cléante. And so Argan's brother and his maid, Toinette, and Molière was famous for his depiction and creation of these outstanding maids who are funny, sexy, outwitting their master all the time, exposing his hypocrisy, and yet not letting one iota of the house fall apart while doing it. She and Argan's brother plot an elaborate plot to cure him of his addiction to doctors and allow true love to establish itself. It's an incredible comedy of the medical profession, our addiction to the medical profession. And it's really, really fun that this story has been translated by Adrian Clarkson and John Van Buren. John has a long-standing history with translation. He was the first English-Canadian to translate the plays of Michel Tremblay into English. So all the early work of Tremblay's was introduced to us through John's efforts and through his work. And Adrian Clarkson, we all know, through her varied and celebrated career as a journalist and certainly as the Governor General of Canada. And this is her favorite play, and all her life she's wanted to translate it. And it's funny, you know, because The Imaginary Invalid is a play that is produced very regularly in French. And yet, because I think of translation, not so much in English. And I noticed that very much when I lived in Montreal, that all the plays of Molière are done. And I was telling a French director recently that I was very excited about this play because I'd never seen it. And he sort of frowned at me and looked a bit shamed. Peter, you really should see The Imaginary Invalid. I mean, and I said to him, well, where would I have seen that? Big pause. You know, it's not done in English. And that is something that I really wanted to address and restore. So I was thrilled with Adrian Clarkson and John Van Buren's translation. This play, written in 1673, so we're going to sort of the end of the 17th century. It's a French play. I wanted to go from the Penelopiad, from the sublime to the pure ridiculous with Molière. David, I'm curious, why do you think Molière would make such a savage and accurate attack on the medical profession, being a man of his time? What was that about for him, and what were some of the things that might have been influencing his mind as he wrote that play?
Well, I think there's obviously a personal element to it. He's quite ill himself. He's going in it. He's dying of TB, I think, at the time.
That's right.
And doesn't he actually die performing
this?
That's
the great theater story, is that he did die. This was the last role he played, and his chair, of course, that he played the role in is kept at the Comédie Française, and he died playing this role.
So I you know, in part, it must have been a personal story for him. He must have had a lot of encounters with doctors in his life. I remember an anecdote many years ago, though, that I came across where some situation he's in with his doctor beside him, and the King Louis XIV is there, and the king says, well, this is the doctor who's curing you and making you better. And Molière says, well, not really. We reason and we argue and we discuss, and then he gives me the remedies. I don't take them, and then I get better. You know, so so he obviously had a life with doctors. But there's a much bigger story to tell about this, and that is the formalization and professionalization of medicine in the early modern, in the 16th, 17th century. In England, for example, the barber surgeons are formed in the reign of Henry VIII, or at least formalized properly as a company and as an organization in the reign of Henry VIII.
And barber surgeons were your doctor. They would pull your tooth, cut your hair.
Cut your bones. Yep.
Lance boil.
And then there's also all those horrible things. Yeah, and when you encounter some of the artifacts, the great Henry's ship, which turned turtle and sank, the Mary Rose was lifted up from the seabed, and all the medical instruments that were uncovered. I remember visiting some of those, and every male looking at these cabinets was crossing his legs because the cures for venereal disease were so horrific. These instruments they were using.
And isn't that where we get the red stripe on the barber's pole is right. the bloodletting they would do.
And they would do, and they do it cheaply, and they much more inexpensively than the other group, which are the College of Physicians, it gets formed in Henry VIII's reign as well, who try and exclude other people from their occupation and charge huge fees. So by the time we get into the 17th century, with issues like the Scientific Revolution and Harvey's discovery of the circulation of blood and so on, there's an assumption by physicians that they are extremely special people, very knowledgeable people. People, therefore, with an expertise that entitles them to charge extremely high fees. Anyone who tries to do things that crosses their territory, crosses their jurisdiction, gets punished and criticized. So the barbers and the barber surgeons who let blood are often criticized, and they're described as charlatans. And of course, the real targets of the physicians are women, because women who are traditional custodians of medicine at home and herbal medicine and herbal remedies are lumped together with quacks and charlatans as just being, illicit and improper. Their knowledge is illicit and improper, and they'll do you more harm. So I think for Molière, he comes through this, his personal illness, his personal encounter with people who are extraordinarily arrogant, full of their own knowledge, and in the play, he mocks this. You know, there's one point I can't remember the actual sequence, but there's a lift as diseases, and it's a bit like, you know, we tell our children you have a cigarette, you'll then smoke marijuana, you have marijuana, right. You'll move on to this drug, and then you move on to this drug, and it's a series of diseases that you'll naturally go through. Mocking the notion that they have all the scientific names down pat, they know the Latin, they know the Greek, but they can't possibly convey that information to their patients in any meaningful way.
So in that respect, like Argan is like the ideal patient for the doctor,
right, absolutely.
The hypochondriac who...
He can be fed all sorts of nonsense and charged all sorts of fees and be none the wiser. And I think isn't there a moment in that where... Toinette, is it?
The maid. Toinette.
Is she the one who pretends that she's a doctor at some point?
Yes.
And she complains, as a doctor would, that his diseases aren't good enough for him anymore, and she wants serious, she wants important diseases. She wants, what we would call publicity-making diseases to deal with, not his sort of silliness. So... You know, there's an element of savagery there, I found, when I read the play.
And, we see that continue today, We were talking about how these traditions continue into our own culture. And you see this, and the great Britcoms managed to continue this forward, and one of my favorites is the old Keeping Up Appearances with Patricia Rutledge playing Hyacinth
wonderful.
Whose real name is Hyacinth Bucket. And she, one episode, her husband, she is convinced has gout.
Right.
And wants him to tell everyone because it's a royal disease from a life of leisure.
That's right. Yeah. And that's a very restoration disease.
Yes, that she's very proud of his gout. Mm-hmm. And it's very much akin to Moliere. And all of, I think, John Van Buren was talking to me the other day about our culture's addiction to these makeover programs where people volunteer for surgeries and have Botox injections and liposuction. And he said that totally makes him think of the play. And thus the really clever play he and Adrian Clarkson have done with Dying to be Sick is Argonne's real pleasure. It's actually the more sick he is. The happier he is,
yeah. And I think we can all relate to that. I mean, just if we're, you know, we like watching late night television, and we just the constant advertisements about, you know, this, what your body is wrong in so many ways, these ailments, this ailments, but also the internet. I mean, the way you can terrify yourself when you get a slight illness and you're on the internet and suddenly, you know, you've got gangrene or something. I mean, you've got something horribly serious, you know. It's quite clear you've got a brain tumor because your toe hurts. You know, there's that, you know, there's that sort of false knowledge too that we want desperate access to. And I think Molière would appreciate that because the profession is sort of preventing us from getting that knowledge. And yet the knowledge, some knowledge is being put on the net and we're getting access to that and terrifying ourselves and running to our doctors saying, we obviously have this, or we've made a careful study of house. And so we know exactly what we've got, you know. But I think there is this, I think there's a lot of distrust of doctors. I mean, you get, you know, popular talk shows that I occasionally listen to while I'm driving around town.
Yes.
And there's criticisms of doctors ripping them off or pretending to know things and not really knowing things. And I think for Molière, that is, it's the pretense of knowledge that really irks him about the medical profession, that they pretend they know what they're doing and they actually don't. And they're pretending to have a scientific knowledge and they're dressing it up with appropriate language. They're dressing up with appropriate fees, and yet really, they're no better than you yourself, curing yourself. And that's a whole, I mean, I don't know whether that anecdote I told earlier is actually true or not, but it's the point of the anecdote is that Molière says, you know, pay attention to them, listen to them, and don't do what they recommend, and you'll be fine. You'll get better.
Who we actually identify with in that play is not Argonne, the hypochondriac, but Toinette.
But Toinette, yeah.
She is our ally. And that's a subversive thing within itself. It's not the rich patriarch that we're to uphold and support. It's the maid.
And the maid would have been played by a woman, too.
Yes, indeed it would. Yeah. Margaret Atwood said a fun thing about maids in the theater. And that's a nice kind of connection I'd not thought of before between Penelope and Dying to be Sick. As she said, the thing about maids is the maids know what's in their master or mistress's underwear and socks drawer. They know all the secrets of their bosses, but their bosses have no idea what's in theirs. And I think that way of looking at that division of power is very interesting. How influential was Molière on the theater of the 17th century? I mean, he's huge. He is the greatest writer of the French language, perhaps, next to Racine. What was his impact on the theater in England and on
As far as I know, it was quite powerful.
Yes.
I mean, when Charles returns and he brings with him the entire tradition that he's experienced in his 11 years of exile in the French court with French performances, with women on stage, but also, of course, Molière and Lully and the music and so on.
Yes.
And so when he comes back and you have the King's Company, the Theatre Royal, as well as the Duke's Company, those influences are very profound on the performances.
You'll see this in some of our later plays that are English plays in the Restoration, that there's a huge influence from the French, isn't there? And the Italian.
Yeah, and the Italian.
French and Italian settings, the Commedia dell'arte, which was a form of theater that the audience might know through Arlecchino and sort of the half masks and diamond pattern or the Pierrot clown. Comes out of this sort of street theater clown tradition from Italy, informed the French theater.
Yeah. Yeah, because Molière actually shared a house with one of the great Italian theatrical people in Paris. Yeah, so they actually, I think, physically shared the theater, the two companies, and they would involve each other's performances. So he had direct experience of the creative process of that Italian theater.
And it's funny, eh, because who but our former governor general would have a take on the hypocrisy of the rich, the powerful, Medicare, you know, healthcare systems.
Yeah.
I think that'll be really fun for our audience to see a whole different side of Adrian Clarkson that they might not know.